1 Kings 18, verses 20 through 24. And so Ahab sent unto all the children of Israel and gathered the prophets together at the Mount Carmel. And Elijah came near unto all the people and said, How long go ye limping between two sides? If Jehovah be your God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. The people answered him not a word. Then said Elijah unto the people, I only am left a prophet of Jehovah, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Let them therefore give us two bullocks, and let them choose one bullock for themselves, and cut it into pieces, and lay it on the wood, and put no fire under it. And I will dress the other bullock, and lay him on the wood, and put no fire under it. And call ye on the name of your God, and I will call on the name Jehovah, and the God that answereth by fire, let him be God. And all the people answered and said, It was well spoken.
Good to hear the little ones sing, and some of the songs that we know, and they know very well. I appreciate Richard leading those songs. I know that the little ones have been studying in their classes regarding certain texts of Old Testament Scripture, and I wanted to, over the past little while, to deal with things that I know they're dealing with, so they'll certainly recognize the things, and hopefully all of us together will learn some things that will be beneficial to us. In the reading of the text from 1 Kings chapter 18, a familiar, I'm sure, occasion when we read about Elijah, the one who called upon the prophets of Baal to offer a sacrifice. And we want to talk about that in our study tonight. I intended tonight to talk about the character of Elijah. And as I began to study and read and prepare my material for tonight, I realized that it was impossible to talk about the character of Elijah just in the short time that we have tonight and do the subject justice. So I had to focus on just one instance, and so tonight we're going to talk about Elijah on Mount Carmel. Elijah the Tishbite. Before we talk about Elijah, I think it's important to set the stage. Why Elijah is doing what he is doing, and that brings us to the question of who was Ahab. Ahab was the king in Israel, but I think it's important to see how he came to be king, and in what sequence he became king. Now, we've talked about Jeroboam, I believe, in our last study, and how that Jeroboam had introduced idolatrous worship among the people of Israel. Well, we note that after Jeroboam's death, Nadab ruled for 2 years before Baasha conspired against him. And Baasha ruled 24 years. And after his death, Elah ascended to the throne, but he only ruled 2 years. Zimri killed him. And then Zimri ruled only 7 days because Omri killed him. And after a period of some division, ultimately, Ahab became king. And Ahab was a very wicked king. Ahab not only introduced the practices of Baal worship among the people of God, as Jeroboam had introduced the practice of idolatry among the nation of Israel. But when we talk about Ahab, we see him not only as a very wicked king, but we see him as a very weak leader of the people of God. He was very easily influenced by those about him. He built the house of Baal in Samaria. He was married to a woman that I can't help but refer to as that old wicked Jezebel, because that's what she was. She was a very domineering woman. She was very steeped in idolatry, and not only did she want to practice the worship of idols, not only did she want to compel others to practice the worship of idols, but she wanted to kill anybody that didn't. And so the prophet Elijah became on her hit list. She wanted to kill Elijah. We'll read about that a bit later, perhaps in our studies, but as we see who Ahab was, it sets the stage for us to talk about the prophet Elijah. In 1 Kings chapter 17, beginning in verse 1, it simply identifies Elijah as the Tishbite. He is also described in verses 7 and 8. It came to pass, or rather in chapter 2 Kings. No, that's not right. Yes, it is. 2 Kings chapter 1. I looked at that and it didn't look right. 2 Kings chapter 1, beginning in verse 7, as a very hairy man, a man that was what we might refer to as rough and outdoors. In verses 7 and 8, it says, He said unto them, what manner of man was he that came up to meet you and told you these things? And they answered, he was a hairy man and girt with a girdle of leather about his loins. And he said, it is Elijah, the Tishbite. Now that's the reading of the American Standard Translation. If you're reading from some other translations, it very simply might be worded that he had a big leather belt around his stomach. And that's what he had. A big leather belt around him. Some have supposed that as Malachi refers to the coming of Elijah, and as Jesus in the New Testament identifies John the Baptist as the Elijah of the Old Testament, that Elijah is here and identifies that as John the Baptist. Well, we know John the Baptist was kind of a rough fellow, as we can read about him in the New Testament. Another thing I thought was rather interesting about Elijah is that as James talks about prayer, he cites the prayer of Elijah that it might rain after it had not rained for 3 years, and indeed it did. But in describing Elijah, he tells us that Elijah was a man of like passions with us. That's real interesting to me, because it helps us to see that Elijah, though he was a prophet, and though he was a great prophet, Elijah lived in a world just like we live in. He was a man of like passions with us. One of the things, again, I want to call your attention to is that when Elijah came to Ahab, he said to Ahab, and here reading from the King James translation, he said, as the Lord God of Israel liveth before whom I stand, there shall not be dew nor rain these years, but according to my word. Now that's very specific. As the Lord God lives, it'll not rain until I say it rains. Now why that is so interesting is that Ahab had introduced Baal worship among the people of God, but also the counterpart known as Astarte, or the Ashereth that we read about frequently in the Old Testament text, together would have been responsible for fruitful seasons and vegetation. Now the Mount Carmel and that area was very well noted because of the green and the lushness of such a place. And when Elijah said it's not going to rain or even have dew for 3 years, and he says that in an environment where the gods that are worshipped are gods of fruitful season and vegetation. Elijah proves the power of God over these things that these people worshipped. Now, Elijah not only prophesied concerning this drought, but Elijah was not immune from the drought that plagued the land. So how was Elijah provided for? God took care of Elijah. In 1 Kings chapter 17, reading beginning at verse 2, it says, and the word of Jehovah came unto him, saying, get thee hence, and turn thee eastward, and hide thyself by the brook Kerith, that is before the Jordan. And it shall be that thou shalt drink of the brook. And I have commanded the ravens to feed there, or feed thee there. So he went and did according to the word of Jehovah, for he went and dwelt by the brook Kerith, that is before the Jordan. And the ravens brought him bread and flesh in the morning, and bread and flesh in the evening, and he drank of the brook. Now you know one of the things that a drought does? It dries up the brook. And so it was during the days of Elijah, because there was no rain, verse 7, in the land. Now Elijah, how are you going to eat? How are you going to be provided for? In verses 8 through verse 24, Elijah is instructed to go to the house of a certain widow where he is going to be fed and cared for. Well, how's that going to be? Elijah asked if there was any food in the house. And she said that all she had was a morsel of bread and that she had meal in a jar. Elijah said, bring it to me. Make it for me first. And you'll note that the bin of flour never ran out. The oil never ran out. There was plenty of food for Elijah and for this woman and her family during the days of the drought. By and by, the woman's son died. And the woman was upset because of the events that transpired and because her son died. Beginning in verse 21 through the end of the chapter, Elijah raised the widow's son and made him alive again. Now, I said all that to say this. Elijah is preparing for something. He had told King Ahab, it's not going to rain until I say it's going to rain. 3 years pass. Again, you can imagine what 3 years without rain or dew would do to a land. It's devastated. Elijah then instructs Obadiah to go and speak unto Ahab and tell Ahab to meet me. In other words, Elijah wants to talk. He said, go show thyself unto Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth. Now, Ahab is very much interested in this because if you'll notice in 1 Kings chapter 18, in verse 5, it tells us, and Ahab said unto Obadiah, go through the land unto all the fountains of water and unto all the brooks, peradventure we may find grass, and save the horses and mules alive, that we lose not all the beast. Now, we might think that Ahab being king, that of all the people in the land, he would be the last to be affected by the drought. And perhaps so. But now even Ahab is affected by the drought. And so he goes in one direction. He wants Obadiah to go in another direction looking for water, looking for grass that they might be sustained. Obadiah, who, by the way, in chapter 18, verse 4, had provided for 100 prophets and fed them, he was to arrange the meeting between Ahab and Elijah. Now, when we read about the coming of the coming together of Ahab and Elijah, begin reading at verse 16. It says, so Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. And it came to pass when Ahab saw Elijah that Ahab said unto him, is it thou, thou troubler of Israel? Again, I'm fascinated at how Elijah is the good guy. But Ahab portrays Elijah as being the bad guy. Elijah is not the bad guy. He's the best friend that Israel has to help them to see who they need to serve. Elijah answered, I have not troubled Israel, but thou and thy father's house. You see, it's you that has forsaken Jehovah. It's you that have followed these false gods, Balaam. It's you. You remember, as we've studied in times gone by regarding David, as David had taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite, Bathsheba, and Nathan the prophet came unto David and described the circumstance of a man who had one little ewe lamb, but he had a neighbor that had all kinds of sheep, and the neighbor had a guest. But rather than to kill one of his, he goes to his neighbor and gets the one little ewe lamb that was raised as a daughter at the man's table and kills it for his guest. David was angry and said that the man that has done this is worthy of death. And Nathan said, thou art the man. That would be you. Now when Elijah is told that you are the troubler of Israel, much like Nathan the prophet, he said, no, that's not me. That's you. You're the one that has introduced a Baal worship among the people of God. And that tells us something about the character of Ahab. Ahab wants to blame anybody but himself. Ahab not willing to accept responsibility for the things that he does. You remember when Jehoshaphat in 2 Kings chapter 22
is to form an allegiance with Ahab to fight against the Syrians. We read about Micaiah. 2 Kings. 1 Kings. I knew that didn't look right when I got to the text. 1 Kings chapter 22. And when Jehoshaphat asked, "Is there another prophet that we might inquire of before we fight against the Syrians?" You'll note in verse 7, it says, "But Jehoshaphat said, 'Is there not here a prophet of Jehovah besides that we may inquire of him?' And the king of Israel," that would be Ahab, "said unto Jehoshaphat, 'There is yet one man by whom we may inquire of Jehovah, Micaiah, the son of Imlah. But I hate him, for he did not prophesy good concerning me, but evil.'" Now, when Micaiah tells him that in verse 14, "If you return, then I'm not a prophet." But Ahab said in verse 17, let's begin reading, "And he said, 'I saw all Israel scattered upon the mountains as sheep that have no shepherd. And Jehovah said, These have no master. Let them return every man to his house in peace.' And the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, 'Did I not tell thee that he would not prophesy good concerning me, but evil?' I know Micaiah. He never tells me anything good. He always tells me bad things." Well, Micaiah told him the truth. And the truth was, ultimately, that Ahab would die. And indeed, Ahab died. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. As one of his enemies shot an arrow and it hit the seam between his armor and ultimately killed him. You know, sometimes truth hurts. Sometimes it's troubling. And so we note in the New Testament, in Matthew the 10th chapter and in verse 34, the text tells us, "Think not that I came to send peace on the earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I came to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." Jesus said that I came to say things to you that's going to be divisive. And so it was with Micaiah. And so it was with Elijah. Their message was not appreciated. Jesus, during his earthly ministry, was accused of stirring up the people. Those of you that we've been studying with in the book of Acts, note when Paul came into the city of Thessalonica, in Acts chapter 17, he was accused of turning the world upside down. Some have said, well, he was setting it right. Indeed. But what we learn is his message was not appreciated. And they drove him out of town. I want to look at the location where this contest between Elijah and the prophets of Baal takes place. The text tells us that it took place in Mount Carmel. The significance of that is how Mount Carmel is described. Isaiah describes it as the splendor of Carmel. He indicates that it is a place that was to be blessed indeed. Just to use that expression, it was understood. We also note that as Solomon uses that expression in the Song of Solomon, chapter 7 and in verse 5, as he describes the woman that he believes he's so in love with. He said, "Thy head upon thee is like Carmel, and the hair of thine head like purple." What does that say about Mount Carmel? Beautiful place. Beautiful place. Well to be admired. And as we read in the book of Nahum, chapter 1, verse 4, as that Old Testament prophet prophesies concerning the fall of Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrian Empire, he mentions Carmel. And I'm persuaded that he has some reference to what occurred during the days of Elijah, as he presents it as a picture of judgment, a place of devastation. Elijah gives a command in verse 19 of our text, 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 19. He says, "Now therefore send and gather to me all Israel unto Mount Carmel, and the prophets of Baal 450, and the prophets of the Asherah 400 that eat at Jezebel's table. Bring them all." And you'll notice that this seems to be in accord with the proposition that Elijah sets forth. All of this is to set the stage for this very question. How long go ye limping between two sides? If Jehovah be God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the people answered him not a word. Sounds plausible, doesn't it? Simple. Bring these prophets. You make a decision who you believe is God. Now, the thing that's interesting about that is there's no middle ground to stand on. You either believe that Jehovah is God or you do not. Joshua called upon the people of Israel, choose you this day whom ye will serve. Whether the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell, or the gods of the fathers beyond the river, but as for me and my house, we will serve Jehovah. You've got a choice to make. And you've got to make that choice today. And Elijah is telling these people, how long go ye limping between the two? You've got to make a choice. If Jehovah be God, serve him. If Baal be God, serve him. Now, when we look at the folks that are going to be offering these sacrifices, the participants in this contest, look at how they're described in verse 22. Then said Elijah unto the people, I alone am left a prophet of Jehovah. But Baal's prophets are 450 men. Well, now, would you think that to be a fair contest? One versus 450. But you've got one man that's dressed rough, coarse, one man that is obviously of the wilderness, but one man who is directing the charge. Here is a man who is unafraid. Here is a man who issues the challenge. Choose you this day. What are you going to do? Bring the prophets, 450 of them. Now, by way of contrast to the prophet Elijah, these prophets are no doubt well fed. They're sleek and elegantly portrayed as the prophets of Baal typically would be. And notice, if you would, they were not ignorant men. They knew they had the stamp of approval of old wicked Jezebel, the queen of Israel. All the pomp and ceremony that accompanied idolatry, they come before Elijah with. Now here's the contrast. Here's the test. Elijah says, beginning in verse 22, verse 23, let them therefore give us two bullocks, and let them choose one bullock for themselves, and cut it in pieces, and lay it on the wood, and put no fire under. And I will dress the other bullock, and lay it on the wood, and put no fire under. Remember the word under. We'll come back to that. But if anyone has an advantage in this contest, it would be the prophets of Baal. Let them choose the sacrifices. Even let them choose one for me. Let them choose which one of the two they want. And let them go first. Now you would think in a contest that would somehow give you an advantage. But the people all agree. Yes, this is fair. Reading beginning in verse 24. And call ye on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of Jehovah. And the God that answereth by fire, let him be God. And all the people answered and said, it is well. Their understanding of the proposition of the prophet Elijah is this is fair. We'll choose who is God by this test. Now look at the beginning of the contest. The prophets of Baal, they go first. In verse 25, and Elijah said unto the prophets of Baal, choose you one of the bullock, or one bullock for yourselves, and dress it first, for ye are many, and call on the name of your God, but put no fire under. And they took the bullock which was given them, and they dressed it, and called on the name of Baal from morning even until noon, saying, O Baal, hear us. But there was no voice, nor any that answered. And they leaped about the altar which was made. Now I want you to see that. Here are 450 prophets. And they built an altar. They prepared the sacrifice on the altar. and they're leaping about the altar, crying upon Baal to hear them. And they continue this from morning till noon. In verse 27, "And it came to pass at noon that Elijah mocked them, saying, Cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is musing, or he is gone aside, or he is on a journey, or peradventure he sleepeth and must be awaked." Now that's a god, isn't it? "That you believe can send fire and consume your altar." Elijah said, or your sacrifice. Elijah said, maybe you need to holler a little bit louder. Maybe he's on a journey and you need to cry loud enough that he can come home. Maybe he's asleep and you need to wake him up. And this is the God that they believe is worthy of worship. Further we note that that incensed these prophets. 450, look at verse 50, or verse 28. "And they cried aloud and cut themselves after their manner with knives and lances till the blood gushed out upon them." Now, can you question their sincerity? Perhaps they believe that Baal can do something. If they cry loud enough, if they make enough noise, if they get his attention, perhaps he can do something. A number of years ago, I saw a film on the television about some fellows that were worshiping some kind of idol. And they thought that they could get his attention by self-abuse such as this. And they had prepared for themselves chains on a stick. And they would take it and slap themselves over the shoulders so that the chains would bruise and cut their flesh on their backs. Can you picture these prophets doing something similar? We would look at that and say, what ignorance. They take knives and lances and they cut themselves until the blood gushes out. And that's what these prophets were doing. Because they evidently believed that if they made enough impression on their God, He would do something. And at last, at the time of the evening oblation, now I want you to picture that. They've done that all morning until Elijah the prophet chides them. And then they get more intense and they do that all afternoon. What kind of condition do you think you would be in after a day of that? Exhausted. And so now they quit. It's Elijah's turn. In verse 29, "It was so when midday was past, and they prophesied until the time of the offering of the evening oblation, but there was neither voice, nor any to answer, nor any that regarded." All of this activity and nothing. Just nothing. In verse 30, "And Elijah said unto all the people, Come near unto me. And all the people came near unto him." I thought it was fascinating when I was studying, preparing for the lesson tonight, this little expression, "come near unto me." These prophets of Baal, what they've been doing, 450 of them, certainly it wasn't possible to get very near to any of them with what they were doing. How would you like to stand close to a man with a knife and a lance who's cutting himself? No. But Elijah calls upon the people, "come near." Now, when you're trying to teach a child something, do you want them to stand way off over there in the corner? No. Come near. Come up close where you can see. Elijah wants them to see what he's doing, the preparation that he's making for the offering on the altar unto God. Come near. And the text tells us that the people came near unto Elijah. And he repaired the altar of Jehovah that was thrown down. And Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, unto whom the word of Jehovah said, saying, Israel shall be thy name. And with the stones he built an altar in the name of Jehovah. And he made a trench about the altar, as great as would contain 2 measures of seed. Now, I wanted to learn how big that was, but I didn't find anything that really gave me an accurate understanding of how big that was. But let's just understand that it was big enough to hold a whole lot of water. A lot of water around the altar and the sacrifice that Elijah is preparing. In verse 33, and he put the wood in order and cut the bullock in pieces and laid it on the wood. And he said, fill four jars with water and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood. And he said, do it the second time. And they did it the second time. And he said, do it the third time. And they did it the third time. In verse 35, and the water ran round about the altar, and he filled the trench also with water. Why do you suppose Elijah did that? Well, we generally understand that water and fire don't get along too well together. And to try to set something on fire that is saturated with water would be very difficult to do. So Elijah wants them to see. Come near and see. He repairs the altar. The altar is drenched with water until the trench roundabout is filled with water. Now you remember the 450 prophets of Baal who have cried out unto their God, have cut themselves with knives and lances. One time, Elijah said, hear me, O Jehovah, hear me, that this people may know that thou, Jehovah, art God, and that thou hast turned their heart back again. Now you remember the challenge as he asked them the question, how long go ye limping between two sides? If Jehovah be God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the people answered not a word. Well, they're getting ready to say something. And we'll notice that in just a moment. But Elijah calls upon God to hear me, that this people may know. Now look at verse 38. Verse 38. The text tells us in verse 38, then the fire of Jehovah fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and licking up the water that was in the trench. You ever try to burn water? God did. He licked it up in the trench. But I want to call your attention that this was no ordinary fire. It tells us in verse 38 that the fire of Jehovah fell and consumed these things. Where was the wood? The wood was on the altar, but it was under the sacrifice. Generally, you light the fire under the sacrifice and the fire goes up. But not in this case. In this case, fire came down. Now, who was God? Fire came down from Jehovah and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust. And it licked up the water that was in the trench. After seeing the prophets of Baal all day, can you imagine what it would be to see the events that these people saw? The result is seen in verse 39 through verse 46. Verse 39 through 46. Particularly, if you'll notice, in verse 39. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces, and they said, Jehovah, He is God. Jehovah, He is God. You remember back over here in verse 21 when the prophet said, how long go ye limping between the two sides? If Jehovah be God, follow Him. But if Baal be God, then follow Him. And the people answered him not a word. They're willing to answer now, aren't they? They've seen something they've never seen before. The prophets of Baal couldn't do that. The people of Israel have said, we'll choose. This is a good contest. If this can be done, then we'll choose. This is good, they said. You have well spoken. As we saw that, in verse 24. The people believe. But we also note that the prophets of Baal are slain. The prophets of Baal are slain. Read, if you will, beginning in verse 40. And Elijah said unto them, take the prophets of Baal, let not one of them escape. And they took them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. That's a lot of prophets. But he slew them. And now they're dead. I want you to look further in the text. In 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 41. And Elijah said unto Ahab, get thee up and eat and drink, for there is the sound of abundance of rain. So Ahab went up unto to eat and to drink. And Elijah went up to the top of Carmel, and he bowed himself down upon the earth and put his face between his knees. And he said to his servant, go up now, look toward the sea. And he went up and looked and said, there is nothing. And he said, go again seven times. And it came to pass at the seventh time that he said, behold, there ariseth a cloud out of the sea as small as a man's hand. And he said, go up, say unto Ahab, make ready thy chariot, and get thee down, that the rain stop thee not. And I want to call your attention to this. Carmel, if you'll look on a map, is near the coast. The rains that came over the people of Israel, the land, came from the Mediterranean Sea. The man who goes out to sea said, there's nothing. And then he went again, and we learned that there was a cloud about the size of a man's hand. About the size of a man's hand. That's not a very big cloud. But it is a cloud. And the cloud grew. And it grew. And it grew. And as we read beginning in verse 45, it came to pass in a little while that the heavens grew black with clouds and wind, and there was a great rain. And Ahab rode and went to Jezreel, and the hand of Jehovah was on Elijah, and he girded up his loins and ran before Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel. Now, do you see a difference in Ahab's response and the response of the people of Israel? The people of Israel saw evidently the same thing that Ahab saw. Their response was, Jehovah, He is God. Jehovah, He is God. You don't hear that from Ahab, do you? You don't hear anything that even hints like Ahab has repented of his sin. You don't hear anything from Ahab that even hints that he's willing to worship God. What we see in Ahab is he gets in his chariot and he rides. He goes away. Now James, in the fifth chapter, talks about prayer. And he says in James chapter 5, beginning in verse 16, confess therefore your sins one to another and pray one for another that ye may be healed. The supplication of the righteous man availeth much in its working. Elijah was a man of like passage with us, and he prayed fervently that it might not rain, and it rained not on the earth for 3 years and 6 months. And he prayed again, and the heavens gave rain, and the earth brought forth her fruit. Now what Elijah did was not to bring forth a miracle. Elijah called upon God for God to exercise His providence in the natural realm of things, and there was a drought. It didn't rain. Elijah, after 3.5 years, prayed that it might rain, and there began to formulate a cloud. And it got bigger, and it rained. This is not a miracle. But what we see is the effective power of a righteous man bringing forth the providence of God to bless the people of God. Now, we don't really see much difference in Ahab. But as we read just a little bit further in 1 Kings, in chapter 21, the prophet of God came to Ahab. And in verse 19, it says, and thou shalt speak unto him, saying, thus saith Jehovah, hast thou killed and also taken possession? And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, thus saith Jehovah, in the place where dogs licked the blood of Naboth, shall dogs lick thy blood, even thine. What are we learning is about to happen to old wicked Ahab? Ahab is going to perish. He has sold himself to do evil. He has not repented. He continues the practices of his sin. In 1 Kings chapter 21, in verses 34 and 35, that's not right. Let me look just a little bit beyond. Well, I've got the wrong passage. 1 Kings chapter 22 in verse 30. No, that's not the passage I'm looking for. 34 and 35. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Verse 34. And a certain man drew his bow at a venture and smote the king of Israel between the joints of the armor. Wherefore he said unto the driver of his chariot, turn thy hand and carry me out of the host, for I am sore wounded. And the battle increased that day, and the king was stayed up in his chariot against the Syrians and died at even. And the blood ran out of the wound into the bottom of the chariot. And there went a cry throughout the host about the going down of the sun, saying, every man to his city and every man to his country. Well, the point I want you to see is, as the prophet said, that the dogs would lick his blood, so it was when Ahab died. That his blood ran into the chariot, Ahab was taken, his chariot was washed out, and the dogs came and licked up his blood, just as the prophet had said. Now, what can we learn as we talk about this contest at Mount Carmel? Number one, God hates sin. He hates sin. What Ahab and Jezebel did was just wrong, and there were consequences that were imposed because of it. Like the widow, we'll be blessed if we follow God's instruction. We don't see any battle on this widow's part with Elijah the prophet to do what he told her to do. She complied. We also note that the majority is not always right. When Elijah said, I and I alone, do you see that in verse, going back to the 18th chapter, verse 22? Then said Elijah unto the people, I, even I alone, am left a prophet of Jehovah. But Baal's prophets are 450 men. Just me. Well, we've got all these other folks who believe that Baal is a god. But when the people cry, Jehovah, He is God. We must understand that. The people of Israel finally acknowledged that. Jehovah, He is God. We also must learn that God has promised to answer our prayers like He answered Elijah's prayer. We're not asking God for a miracle when we pray, and neither did Elijah. But God responded through His care to the things that Elijah prayed for, and it didn't rain, and then it did rain because Elijah prayed. We also must note that the wages of sin is still death. And we know that Ahab died physically because God would not bless him. He was rebellious against God. But we know that the consequence of sin is to be forever separated from God unless we avail ourselves of the blood of Christ that we might be forgiven. There's no evidence that Ahab ever repented of his sin. But you can. You believe that Jesus is the Christ, that He is the Son of God. You may this night turn from your sin. Confess your faith and humbly be baptized into Christ. And you can start again. Ahab didn't do that. He pursued the same old course, robbing himself of the blessings of God and ultimately being killed. More importantly, losing his soul. And my friend, if you've obeyed the gospel, you've been baptized into Christ, you've started out good, and you've messed up, you've committed sin, you're pursuing that course, you must repent of it or you'll be lost. God has provided the sacrifice of His Son that you might be saved. We can assist you in that. Make it known while together we stand and sing.